Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So, hey, everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question, why song makes you wonderful? Well, something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Genesis, and we'll be continuing today with part one of Obedience and Blessing. So let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 13, verse 1, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
In our last study, we saw how with the call of Abram, a whole new period in the history of redemption began. Abram is to be, as we saw, the progenitor of a new race through whom the divine promises are to be preserved and ultimately fulfilled. We also saw how the beginning of Abram's walk of faith was a mingling of success and failure due to human weakness. The call, as you remember, was to get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. Abram was successful in that he did get out of his country, but he failed in regard to breaking away from his family and also in going directly to the land of Canaan. Instead, under the influence of his father, Terah, he went on a long detour to the land of Haran, and only after his father's death did he resume his journey toward the land of Canaan. So as we pointed out, this wasn't due to any rebellion to the call or the will of God on the part of Abraham, but it was really more due to human weakness. Just that inability to really let go, that inability to make that complete separation from the family. And we saw that God, in his patience and in his mercy, he overruled Abraham's failure there. So, as we pick up the story, Abram is just recovering from a second lapse of faith, and we read about that as well. You remember he had gone to Canaan. Finally, after his father died, he came into the land, and when a famine struck, rather than seeking God for wisdom, he went down to Egypt. And in going down to Egypt, he actually was jeopardizing the plan of God by allowing his wife Sarai to potentially be compromised by Pharaoh. You remember, as they were going into Egypt, Abram said to her, "Now, you're very beautiful, and there's a chance that if they know that you're my wife, they're going to kill me in order to get at you, so say that you're my sister." And she complied, and she was taken into the home of Pharaoh, but you remember the story, God intervened. And so again, God has overruled Abram's mistake and now has brought him back into the promised land. But before further blessing can come, obedience must be complete. And this is what we're looking at here. We're looking at this process that Abram is going through. God is patiently enduring with his human weakness to bring him to a place of total obedience, really, in order that the blessing of God might be fully poured out upon his life. Now remember, the command of God to Abram was to separate himself from his father's house. And here in the passages that we'll look at here, we see that circumstances have arisen that will bring Abram into complete conformity to the original call of God. God's sovereign plan in Abram's life, in your life, in my life, God's sovereign plan will not be thwarted by human weakness. And in the case of Abram, if Abram cannot cut the final cord that binds him to his family, God will cut it himself. And that's exactly what we're going to see. But God will do it in a way that seems as though it wasn't his doing. He will send Lot away. Lot is the final connection back to Ur, back to his father's house, back to his family. But God will send him away, yet seemingly through natural circumstances. So let's look at the 13th chapter, and let's pick it up in verse 5. So Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. And the Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Arise and walk in the land, through its length and its width, for I give it to you." Then Abram moved his tent and went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord. So we see that God has sovereignly worked the circumstances out to accomplish really for Abram what he was unable to do himself because of human weakness. And I think that as we look at this particular chapter, there are a couple of specific things that God would speak to us from this chapter. But there are a few other things that are, you know, sort of incidental to the story, but I think that they are important to mention as well. So initially, just a few observations. Notice that there is strife that develops between the herdsmen of Abram and the herdsmen of Lot. And notice also, it says in verse 7, the Canaanites and the Perizzites dwelt in the land. And Abram recognizes that this is a problem. And so he says, let there be no strife between us. He recognizes that this isn't a good thing, not simply because of the contention between them, but I think it's significant that it mentions to us that the Canaanite and the Perizzite then dwelt in the land. And I think the point that we could draw from that is that strife among brothers is a bad witness to the world. Now remember, Abram's coming into this country that God is giving him, into this land, and he's coming in as a representative of the living God. But now there's strife, there's contention within his own ranks, and I think Abraham saw this as a bad witness. And so he says to Lot, let's separate. So the strife will cease, basically. And you know, that same thing is true today. It's not good when there's strife between us and the world is watching. It's a bad witness. And I think we need to really be conscious of that. And we need to be on our guard, because the world is watching. And the world is looking for some reason to reject the claims of the gospel. They're looking for any reason to reject Christianity. They're looking for any reason to say, oh, the church, you know, that's just a bunch of hypocrites. Why would we want to be part of that? And when there's strife among us publicly, it just adds fuel to their fire. As many of you are aware of, one of the local pastors from this area was asked by President-elect Obama to say the inaugural prayer at his inauguration. And there's been a lot of controversy, and there's been a lot of contention and a lot of strife in the body over this. And I think this is one of those examples. And you know, I think that even though we might disagree over philosophical things and maybe some minor doctrinal issues, we agree on the essentials of the faith, and I think we ought to prayerfully support this man and not be publicly criticizing and things like this. I don't think it really does the cause of Christ much good. I love what Franklin Graham said. I read a quote from him in regard to this, and he said, you know, if you've got the liberal left media hating you and the militant homosexual community hating you, you're probably doing something right. So, you know, I had to agree with that. So, you know, we have to be careful, because it's so easy for us. And I can get so, you know, nitpicky about certain things. I don't like the way they do this, and I don't like the way they do that. But, you know, we have to be careful. And we have to realize that there are essential things that we've got to hold firm to the essentials. We can't compromise on those at all. But there are a lot of minor doctrinal issues as well. We're not all going to see things just alike on the minor issues. And that's where we've just got to have a lot of grace. So strife among brothers isn't good. And I think it would be beneficial to the church if we just stopped gossiping and you know, bickering about that. And let's just pray that God will bless and use this man and the opportunity that the Lord has given him. So this is one observation from the passage here. But secondly, and this is in reference to Lot, what we see here is that the spiritually compromised will not partake in the full blessing of God. Now, here's the thing about Lot, is the fact that the New Testament refers to him as a genuine believer. Peter even refers to him as a righteous man. But when you look at his conduct here in Genesis, it's a little bit perplexing. But the reality is, Lot was a believer, but he was a compromised believer. He was, you know, interested in God and in the things of God, but he was also very attracted to the world. That's why he chose to move in the direction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Those places reminded him of Egypt. They were lush and flourishing. And so although Lot was a believer, he would not participate in the covenant of God. I don't think it was because he couldn't have, but I think it's his heart prevented him from being able to be part of the covenant because his heart was divided. He was compromised. The third thing that I notice here is Abram's dealing with the situation. Notice the posture of the man of faith. And this is such a beautiful picture to me. With Abram, there's no striving. He says to Lot, you know, this division between us, this isn't good. Let's solve this problem. And look, you choose. If you want to go to the right, I'll go to the left. If you want to go to the left, I'll go to the right. It's up to you. I give you the choice. And here you see the posture of the man of faith is the posture of quietness and confidence. He's not going to let the circumstances rattle him. He's trusting in the promises of God. He knows what God has told him. And so he doesn't have to strive. He doesn't have to try to force something. He doesn't have to exert himself and put himself forth first and say, hey, wait a second, you know, I'm the one with the promises and, you know, you're just tagging along anyway. You get out of here. This is all, I want that land that's lush and beautiful. But he just surrenders it all up to the Lord. And, you know, as we're walking by faith, as we're living by faith, that will be our posture as well. We don't have to strive for things. We don't have to try to force something. But we can just sort of sit back and say, well, Lord, you know, I'm trusting you. And I believe that you're able. And I can let everybody else around me, you know, run after this and strive for that. And I don't have to do that. It's the posture of faith, quietness and confidence. Just, hey, whatever you want to do, go ahead. I'll take the leftovers, even if it doesn't look good. It's all right because I'll just trust the Lord to sort it all out in the end. You know, some people would say, well, that's a totally stupid way to live. You're going to get ripped off. You're going to get taken advantage of. Maybe you will. But you know what? It doesn't really matter because God's going to rectify everything in the end. And, you know, there are times in life when we will get ripped off. There are times in life when we will be taken advantage of. But it's all going to get sorted out in the end, and we can just trust that. And oftentimes, of course, it'll get sorted out right in the course of our lifetime. So Abram is trusting God. He's quiet. He's confident. He's allowing Lot to choose for himself, and he's going to just trust God for the rest. So those are just a few observations. Now, I think in this story, there is both an overarching lesson as well as a couple of specific lessons from this season in Abram's life. Now, I think the overarching lesson, not just here with Abram, but with all of the patriarchs, there is this overarching lesson, and this is essentially it, that God is sovereignly working in the lives of his people to bring them into conformity to his will. You know, I think sometimes we put too much emphasis on ourselves. We sometimes sort of feel like, you know, everything is up to me. We sort of, you know, the burden of the whole thing is on my shoulders. And it's based on my performance. And it's based upon, you know, me always getting it absolutely right every time. But, you know, you try to live like that and you can end up really frustrated. You can end up really condemned. You can end up really disillusioned. You can end up at the point of despair because you think, oh no, I've messed things up so bad, it's never going to get sorted out. But we have to remember, you see, God is working. And God works sovereignly in the lives of his people to bring things to pass. I am so thankful that the will, the plan, the purpose of God is not dependent on me. Boy, if it was, we would all be in big trouble. But it's not. You see, God is at work. And like I said initially, I really believe that this separation here that seems like a natural thing over this dispute, I believe that this is all part of God working behind the scenes. I believe this is all a part of God sovereignly separating these two men so he can bring the blessing to Abram that he intended to bring, that Abram was sort of hindering because of his affection for his family member. He couldn't let the relationship go. So God says, all right, well, here's what we'll do. We'll allow strife to develop between them, and this will force things in the direction that it needs to go. And if you think about it, any of you that have known the Lord for a while, if you stop to think about it, you could probably think of a number of things similar to that that have occurred in your life that maybe at the time that it transpired, you didn't see the hand of the Lord in it, but later on you look back and you realize, man, God brought that to pass. Can anyone think of anything like that? I know I can. I can think of a number of things like that. God allows a person to maybe they get a job transfer and they don't want to leave. They don't want to move out of the area. They love where they're at, but they need the job. They don't want to let go of the job either. So, you know, they go with the transfer. And to them, it looks like a huge mistake. And yet, they find that where they're relocated to, something happens and things develop. And lo and behold, God had some amazing thing for them there that they never would have even been able to experience had they not been transferred. But initially, it looked so wrong. And it looked like, God, you hate me. And God has surely lost control of my life because he knows I want to live in Newport Beach. I don't want to live in Minnesota. But God's got something there. Or maybe you lose your job. And, you know, I worked so hard to get in the position that I was in. And I was, you know, just at that place where the security was there. And now I've lost my job. And God, where are you? And you probably don't even love me anymore. And God, it seems like you've forsaken me because I've lost my job. But then you find down the road something comes up. And you get another job offer. And you go into maybe even sometimes a whole new field that you never even imagined that you would go into. And then you get in there and you find all of these blessings, all of these wonderful things. And you think back and, you know, I never would have moved in this direction. I never would have thought to do this. You couldn't have, you know, if you would have told me this was going to happen, I never would have believed it. But you see, how do you explain that? You see, God is working sovereignly through the seemingly natural circumstances of life. God so often works supernaturally in very natural ways. But that's where we miss it, because we think, oh, if God's working, that, you know, surely it's going to be a great mystical experience. And, you know, there's going to be a voice from heaven speaking to me saying, you know, go east, young man, or, you know, something like that. But no, your boss came in and said, hey, you're fired. It's over. That was God speaking. So maybe it's a loss of your job, or maybe God has allowed a relationship to break up. And you thought, no, this was the relationship. This was the person. Oh, I could tell you stories. I know so many people that were dead set on a particular relationship and were convinced that this is the way to go and this is the person. And then something happened and it didn't work out. But lo and behold, they met another person further down the road. And man, oh, thank you, Lord, that you got me out of that relationship. Maybe it's a sickness. Maybe it's a setback. We could just go on and on with examples. But understand that these are the kinds of things that God uses to do the kinds of things in our life that we would not do ourselves. We wouldn't even understand much of the time that this is what we would need to do.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Genesis in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part two of Obedience and Blessing. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Obedience and Blessing. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT0026. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.